and also to make sure that revenue does not leave the country. We are also told that the internet gambling industry is growing substantially abroad, and that is expected to continue growing, and that therefore South Africans might, as time goes on, a lot more people might be accessing internet gambling, and therefore it's crucial that we regulate these activities. The objectives of the bill basically, one, are to protect players. Secondly, to make sure that we channel revenue to the national fiscus rather than revenue leaving the country. Also to make sure that we share in the global IG industry revenue. Chair and honorable members, the National Gambling Act of 2004 placed a responsibility on the Minister of Trade and Industry to introduce into Parliament within 2 years legislation for the regulation of interactive gambling, hence this particular bill. But after that, the research committee was instituted, which then investigated the regulatory framework of interactive gambling, looking at what is happening in other countries and also taking into account conditions in South Africa and the situation in our country, and making recommendations on how to approach this particular matter. That report was tabled before the National Gambling Policy Council, and thereafter the department then undertook to draft a policy document around the regulation of interactive. That policy was shared with stakeholders and was also placed before the National Gambling Policy Council. And as I mentioned, the draft bill was then developed and approved by Cabinet last year and published for comment. We received about 20 written submissions around this issue. And the issues that were raised centered around licensing issues, the location of servers, issues around money laundering, and protection of players, and dealing with problem gambling and the over-stimulating effects of gambling in society. And as such, we then incorporated a lot of those suggestions or proposals into the revised bill as submitted to the state law advisor and as submitted to this committee. The stakeholders that we consulted with included the National Gambling Board, the provincial licensing authorities, we consulted with the National Treasury, the South African Reserve Bank, the Revenue Services, the Casino Association, industry role players, the National Responsible Gambling Program, and Problem Gamblers Anonymous. And as I've already mentioned, the research report, the policy framework, and the bill seek to deal with the protection of vulnerable persons. And these would include minors and other people that are actually not in a position to make informed decisions on their own. We also seek to deal with addiction to gambling, exposure to money laundering and organized crime, and put in place ways of dealing with those. The bill also looks at issues around the competition within the local gambling industry and the cost of regulation, as well as monitoring. The approach that we took is that of amending the National Gambling Act rather than coming up with a separate piece of legislation around interactive gambling. And in terms of the policy, it was recommended that interactive gambling should form part of the broad policy for the regulation of all forms of gambling. You'll recall that our 2004 Act is actually informed or follows from the 1996 Act, which follows the Zeehan Commission that actually recommended that South Africa should take the approach of regulating the various forms of gambling and putting in place appropriate institutions, putting in place appropriate regulations to deal with various forms of regulation. And therefore, what we have currently in terms of the National Gambling Act would also apply to the form of gambling, which is interactive gambling. The way the bill is structured, obviously we introduce new terms to the existing piece of legislation. We provide for interactive games and we provide for player protection. The bill provides for issues around advertising, licensing, compliance and enforcement. We deal with problem gambling, money laundering, empowerment issues, as well as taxation issues. So basically the bill that is placed before the committee establishes a legal basis for the provision, the regulation and the control of interactive gambling within the Republic. As I mentioned earlier on, we recognize said that this is a growing form of gambling, and therefore it's incumbent upon government to regulate such activities in the public interest and to make sure that there are necessary provisions, you know, to deal with problematic issues such as money laundering and problem gambling and the like. It also provides for the authorized forms of electronic communication for purposes of interactive gambling, and this bill is actually informed in this regard by the Electronic Communications and Transactions Act. And we also provide for authorized game systems and methods. In other words, providers will actually provide games that are only authorized or prescribed by regulation. Around player protection, we propose that players should actually register with providers so that each provider or each service provider of an interactive gambling service would know who are the people that are actually playing on site, to prevent issues such as minors having access to gambling and other prohibited persons, you know, from accessing these games. So we provide that players must be registered, and we also provide for the establishment of player accounts, that is for the payment of winnings. We provide for the prohibition of South Africans from engaging in interactive gambling activities provided by service providers that are not registered in the Republic. We also provide for the methods of payment of prices to players and remittance to foreign players as well as external companies. We provide for very strict property checks on providers. In other words, every person that seeks to provide an interactive gambling service will have to undergo a very strict property check. Providers are not allowed to extend credit to players. we provide for dispute resolution mechanism, and that the license conditions of each service provider should actually be displayed on their website so that players know exactly what this particular provider is entitled to. There are issues of advertising, and you will know that the National Gambling Act actually provides for advertising within certain conditions. So therefore, those provisions in the National Gambling Act will apply to interactive gambling as well. There are issues such as providers should actually carry a notice on the dangers of addictive and compulsive gambling. And only licensed providers are permitted to advertise interactive gambling. And we provide for the minister to prescribe the content which may be reflected on an interactive gambling website. Chair and honourable members of the committee, the issue around licensing has been a challenging one. And in terms of our policy framework and what we provide for in the bill, because of the borderless nature of interactive gambling, we propose that interactive gambling licenses should be issued as national licenses. However, there are different views here around this particular issue, especially from our colleagues from the provinces, and it's something that we would want to put before the committee. In terms of what we are proposing is that interactive gambling licenses should include operator licenses, employee licenses to cater for key employees, management staff, and as well as directors of the service provider. We also provide for the licensing and testing as well as the certification of the interactive gambling software, equipment, manufacturers, suppliers, maintenance providers of IG equipment as well. So what we have here, Chair, really are very strict conditions for the licensing of this particular activity, as well as the people that will be charged with discharging this kind of service. Around issues of compliance and enforcement, we propose that the National Gambling Board should be responsible for ensuring compliance with the National Gambling Act and the conditions of license issued to service providers. We also propose that the NGB should be responsible for supervising and enforcing compliance by licensees with the Financial Intelligence Center Act and others that deal with financial services and are regulated outside of our scope. The NGB, we propose, should also be responsible for conducting inspections with regard to interactive gambling websites and premises where IG equipment software is located. The National Gambling Board will have power to revoke or suspend licenses for non-compliance. We propose that servers for the provision of this service should actually be located in South Africa. And as such, the National Gambling Board will have the ability to monitor and to check or to inspect such equipment. However, the board will have the responsibility or the power to delegate some of its enforcement and compliance powers to the provincial licensing authority. And as we all know that gambling in general has negative effect if there is over stimulation. So in that regard, we provide for the electronic system for the monitoring and reporting of registered players, and that to avoid people from getting into debt and borrowing money, you know, in order to gamble and so forth, we provide that there should actually be limits in terms of the amount of money that people will be expected to bet on. And we also provide for the auditing of the playing pattern and behavior of players. And we provide for a self-diagnosis system as well, where players will be able to self-diagnose themselves and to see whether they are actually in a very concerning situation or not. As already mentioned, there must be a notice on the website of every IG provider with respect to voluntary player exclusion, with respect to the treatment of addictive gambling as provided for by the National Responsible Gambling Program. And we've had discussions with our colleagues from National Treasury as well as the Financial Intelligence Center around issues of money laundering. And some of the ways of actually preventing or trying to proscribe that particular activity will be through the registration of players and the verification of player identity. In other words, before somebody plays or accesses internet gambling, they must actually be identified and their identity verified. And because this particular system depends on electronic payment, so there are already systems in place, for instance, through credit cards and like financial institutions already have systems in place to identify people and also to prevent money laundering activities. Players from selected countries will help to comply with the Financial Action Task Force or a designated organization that actually deals with money laundering issues. We also provide for the establishment of player accounts and the verification of nominated accounts, as already mentioned, and there are systems in place already through our financial services system. And we also provide for the regulation of the method of payment to service providers, and basically this will be through credit card payment. And we place an obligation on service providers to report suspicious and illegal activities as provided for by our future legislation. And through regulations as prescribed by the minister, we will also be able to provide for control systems. So there are a number of regulations that we will have to develop to actually give effect to this particular piece of legislation, and we will deal with other issues around control measures. And because this amendment takes cue from the National Gambling Act, and we know that in the National Gambling Act, obviously there are issues around black economic empowerment and socioeconomic upliftment, so we still provide for those issues in this particular amendment. By way of conclusion, actually, the amendments actually asking the portfolio committee to consider actually tries to provide certainty around the issue of interactive gambling. We also want to make sure that we retain the revenue that is currently lost to foreign jurisdictions. We want to retain it within our national system. We want to ensure accountability in the in interactive gambling and the broader gambling industry. We also seek to eliminate illegal operators in the country. And we know that currently we actually have a couple of illegal operators. We seek to protect players because currently players are accessing foreign jurisdictions or rather foreign-based interactive gambling sites who are not in a position really to protect them because our laws cannot protect what is provided outside of our borders. We also seek to provide for an effective and transparent licensing process around interactive gambling. Chair and honorable members, this in brief is the amendment bill as submitted to the committee for its consideration. Thank you.
Mr. Sivanda, thank you very much for the overview of the intended amendment bill. I'm not sure if there's anyone from the delegation that should like to make further comments, or if not, then I'll ask the members for the initial comment on the overview.
Thank you, Chair. I'll certainly give my colleagues an opportunity to probably add here and there and to probably talk about issues that I could have on the text. Thank you.
Okay, let's do that.
Thank you, Chair. I think my colleagues are okay and will allow us to the Chair. Thank you.
Members, opportunity for comment, questions. Prof. Chirok.
Chair, thank you. As previously, there are some problems with the gambling industry. And it seems to me that the department is confusing a number of issues. I start off from the position that gambling has many, many problems and many unfortunate consequences, whether it's gambling, the internet, slot machines, casinos. We've been through this on many occasions. And we've often pointed out to the department and indeed to the cabinet that the legislation which comes before us isn't sufficiently critical of gambling as an activity. And as you rightly point out, it often has serious consequences for individuals. So it seems to me that when you have a relative evil in society, then either Parliament takes the view that we prohibit that, or we regulate it to curb it. What we don't is legislate to encourage it. And it seems to me that there's a confusion on the part of the department. What is our approach here? Is the intention to prohibit? The answer is no, except that you do want to prohibit money laundering, which I think all of us would favor. Money laundering is a crime, and it's under the FATE Act and various other legislation. So Parliament has recognized that money laundering is an evil and must be prohibited. But the question of gambling, do we regulate it to curb it, or do we regulate it to encourage it? For example, you say that providers may advertise. Why on earth should Parliament allow providers to advertise an evil, an activity which often has, and I say often, an unfortunate consequence. So I would say, first thing, no advertising. If people want to gamble, let them find their way in a regulated and in a, under legislation which curbs that activity rather than encourage. Second point is that this is a moral issue for the country, fundamentally moral. And men talk of the fiscus. Our fiscus has a surplus. We don't need to use bad methods, bad activities, to raise money for the fiscus. I object to that. I will never vote for a thing like this. That Parliament should say, we want to regulate an industry in order to get money for the fiscus. Well, why don't you get money from prostitution? From crime? You know, this is verging on criminal activity in many cases. So the issue of fiscus is absolutely unacceptable as far as I'm concerned. If we're going to curb it, if we're going to regulate it, then let's do that. But not in order to make money out of it. In the same way, the mention of social commitment or whatever it is, it's quite unacceptable that an unfortunate and a regrettable industry should be asked to create, to contribute to socio-economic upliftment. They say the same for prostitution, etc. So, you know, you're mixing up things here. There's an industry which has unfortunate effects in society, especially among the poor, and you want to make money out of it for the fiscus. It's wrong. It's morally wrong. Now, when you say that you have consulted, I know that you've not consulted the churches. You've not consulted society. What you've consulted is licensing, the Treasury, the Reserve Bank, all these techniques, the Casino Association. Why don't you consult the churches? Why don't you consult society broadly? It's a moral issue, not a fundraising issue. So I think your department has got the wrong approach. And then the question of authorized games. Why should we authorize games? Let's look at games. If they ban, we ban them. So, Chair, my view, in short, is that the approach is the wrong one. They're treating this gambling as an ordinary industry when it is not. It's a social evil which we may have to allow and therefore regulate in order to curb, but we must not make money out of it, and we must treat it as an unfortunate activity in society. Thank you.
Thank you, Prof. Next was Kumri Khatmi.
Thank you, Chair. So following from the comments by Prof. Turok Chen, we would want to say that we welcome the presentation again. As we did last time, but I think we need to voice our feeling about the gambling activity itself. I think it is improper for Parliament to actually comment on gambling activities. The moral fibers of our society. Gambling, and we are repeating that again. And we would accept the move by government to regulate gambling precisely because it was unregulated. We could not detect activities that were illegal. So if you regulate, we can accept it as a form of transition towards phasing out gambling. Because you first to have, you know, to have knowledge of all these activities, you know, in order to do away or to deal with them. Phase them out, abolish gambling altogether. We cannot survive as a country through gambling in terms of fiscal. I think the moral, we can't accept that. So, would want to echo those statements that we did. But we would like to see some form of that commitment from the department in terms of your bill, that this is towards doing away with this unacceptable activity. We have raised examples where communities have been robbed off, you know, of their living through gambling. And some of these activities are brought very near to the vulnerable communities we have pointed out in the past. But Chair, let me actually find out also about the commitment to empowerment by the service providers. So, how will this commitment be achieved? On your last page 9, slide 17, you say that conditions for awarding of interactive gambling license is subject to commitment to socio-economic upliftment, broad-based like economic empowerment requirements. How would you ensure that this is achieved? And we're fair, even if we're in transition, this particular business is solely owned by whites in this country. Black people who should be, you know, part of, you know, what we say should benefit the country, who are the majority in the country, are not benefiting it. Instead, they are actually being robbed of, because they are the players and the business people are the people that benefit out of this. So we are not going to be quiet about this, but there has to be a demonstration that clearly, in the interim, whilst you are regulating for purposes of doing away, then people must benefit. On slide number, page 8, slide number 16, the last bullet point, part 1, obligation on interactive gambling provider to report suspicious and illegal activity, right? How would you know if illegal activities are not reported by the provider itself or itself? If there's no report, you say it's an obligation, yes. But how would you tighten up that obligation so that you are sure that they are reporting everything? Code number 6, page 6, number 11, the bullet point that says prohibits South Africans from engaging in interactive gambling activities provided by providers not registered in the Republic. In practical terms, how would this work? That the register that are not registered in the Republic. You know, I'm thinking of internet gambling. You say this, the ID is borderless. In the statement in one of your slides, that it is borderless, and therefore registration should be national, not provincial, and so on. And what about those that are outside the Republic? So could you just talk to how practically would this be achieved? So long, Chair. I think I'm going to rest my case here, pending the responses from the department. Thanks.
Dr. Hasmani, thank you very much. Comrade Lally.
Yeah, thank you for your question. I think I'll join my colleagues in terms of the current presentation. My first question would be on page to slide number 3. Under objective day, we talk about policy rationale, say cost of coefficient high. I wonder if you can just leave it elaborate for us on this one. You know, the reason I'm bringing this one, it just takes me to another area which is not part of the presentation here. I remember when we were discussing the GMO, we were even told in terms of the label by the Department of Health that it's very high. So then, therefore, when they go to that area, they said, no, we may not label each and every food stuff because of the high cost that's involved. I just want to check in terms of this cost of provision high, what does that mean in relation to the presentation before us? I want to deal with the fiscal, which I think that has been dealt already, that one. Then the other issue under page 3, your slide number 6, the question of the consultation. Logist in character, I just want to check in terms of the civil society. The organization supposedly represents some of the broader society of San Hoko. I wonder if some of the organizations like those that have been called, if not, they were not consulted on what basis, because in essence, the gambling is affecting the ordinary people rather than your treasury and other related issues, because those ones are making money than of the day, in terms of that area. Also, in relation to Contralesa and SALC as an organized local government, what some of these issues are affecting local government one way or another, whether those consultations have been done that particular angle or not. If not, you can explain to us why that has not been done. The other issue is on page 4, slide number 7, protection of vulnerable persons. So if I read your amendment under the memorandum, that is on page 17 of the memorandum, that under paragraph 2.4, the protection of children under and other vulnerable persons. Now, I want to link this with the consultation between the departments. So there are legislations sometimes which are contradictory. We're talking about they're 18 years and older or older. For example, there's a legislation here which has created a controversy on the 12-year-old who can do certain things without the consultation of their parents. I'm just checking now in terms of this particular paragraph, whether when you link with the various departments, whether the various legislations are talking to one another. Because you find that there's an overlapping in terms of various legislations. You'll find that in a legislation A, it talks about the 18 years. In a legislation 2, it talks about 15 years. In a legislation 3, it talks about 12 years. I don't know in terms of the coordination in terms of a particular area, whether that has been taken on board in relation to the various legislation per se. The other issue, Chair, which I just want to check on that, will be, which I think that has been canvassed already, but I just want to quickly deal with that one. It's on page 9, slide number 17. You know, I think in this part here, sometimes there are terms or terminologies are used, which sometimes, I don't know whether it's intentional or unintentional, of course, that when you use a certain word, you are attracting the acceptance of something. Right, the question of your BEEs, your social economic placement, those terms are sometimes used in such a way that you attract, maybe you, when you come before certain presentation, you think that, oh, these individuals, they attracted this terminology. Let's use these terms so that you attract the acceptance of what you want to be accepted. You know, the issue here, how are you going to make sure that around this particular issue may not have the unintended consequences at the end of the day. Because if this broad based economic problem has got its own problem, another element for another debate somewhere. Because once you begin using these issues as if there's something that is supposed to be accepted immediately because there are these terms that are being used. But I think that our area needs also to be looked at very, very carefully. Maybe the last issue, Chair, if you allow me, is the protection. No, that's fine. I think I'm covered now. Thank you very much, Chair.
Okay. You've made your point very well. I'll just say that in terms of the cross-reference to other departments, for the sake of clarity in this particular meeting, the issue that you are referring to where you said that certain 12-year-olds are allowed to do certain things. But suggest that we stay away from parables and point exactly to what you are referring to. That particular issue obviously was reference to 12-year-olds allowed to have access to contraceptives. So I'm just saying that if we are going to have a meaningful discussion here, where possible, let us be clear so that we don't need people surmising as to what you are referring to. The next was Comrade Bulifan. I've noted you, Mr. Lamaskaki.
Chairperson, thank you very much. I'm not so sure whether we'll be able to change the moral issues, because the fact of the matter is there's a gambling act. And I think what we're trying to do here is to amend a portion to bring us in the mainstream of online activity. I think that's what we're trying to do. So I just want to say that it says here that 3.5 million people have access to the internet, and you're trying to get some of those people to get access to gambling if they so choose. I just want to say that you also say that if these people ever have access to the internet wishes to participate, they must register. And I'm saying that one of the moral issues that I have a problem with is that we're trying to curb gambling because it has negative problems. You can't stop it anymore, you're trying to curb it. Because you have people that lives are being destroyed by that. Now, if you say people must register so they become an active, almost permanent participant, isn't there a danger in that particular thing? Because you actually say now, for you to come and gamble, you must be there, permanent online, or permanent participant, because you prevent me not wanting to be a permanent participant in gambling, not to do casual gambling, online. I just want you to elaborate that, because I think it's extremely dangerous to compel me to gamble, not to gamble unless I'm a permanent participant.
Thank you very much, Mr. Lavoskati.
Thank you, Chair. Astonishingly, I agree with most of the comments made by my colleague from the ANC, and this is now, I've got nothing in anticipation of the crossover, I can assure you. you know, like, everything, it sounds very nice. We're going to do this and protect and so forth. Of course, the devil's going to be in the detail when we get down to the nitty-gritty. And I wonder, why do we actually need this bill? Why don't we just prohibit it? I mean, you know, casinos, at least, whether you like them or not now, are in existence. They're there, they provide more than, you know, conference facilities and jobs and so forth. But at least there's a certain arm's length. You have to get up and go there. Now we're just making it comfortable for everybody to sit at home and gamble away. You know, the internet, if we say a small, on slide 2, a small percentage, I think a small percentage, you know, can be a couple of 100,000 people that I have problems with. And things like, you know, warnings. It sounds very nice. There's warnings on boxes of cigarettes, which quite frankly are totally meaningless. It doesn't make stop anybody doing things either way. I also don't know how we're going to, you know, in reality and effectively achieve all these wonderful sort of promises that the Act makes. I also don't see how, you know, I know Professor Turok has complained about we don't want to make money, but the fiscus,
But how are we going to link those things up? You know, this is to be, you know, something that's unclear. And players from selected countries, how are we going to select those people? We don't know the first thing about somebody sitting in America. I also don't see, again, I agree with the Honorable Jolly. I mean, how does somebody who's running an internet thing assist the socio-economic upliftment of society? I also wonder, you know, consultation is always one of these interesting things. We always say there's consultation, but of course we never know in consultation how much was taken on the board or not taken on board. You know, it's such a broad type of statement. You know, somebody consults, I speak to you, I say, hello to you, have I consulted you? What's taken on board? What hasn't been taken on board? I don't know. I don't know. Maybe we'll find out in due course when we get to hearings as to what was and what's not taken on board. And then, I mean, we're sitting with a, as I said, necessary evil, if I can put it that way, of casinos, which now are there and exist. How does this link up with that? Are we now going to provide a whole, you know, there's certain limitations on casinos. They're sort of, you know, limited to a certain extent in the number and so forth. Are we now not, in a sense, defeating that object by having a lot of unlimited providers? Are you going to have quotas? So, I'll leave it at that. Saint Afrikaans, Kate speaking with long tongue, and also, I don't know why, would it not have been better to have a separate act so you completely separate A from B? But, you know, that's something that's, you know, I suppose the legal people were quite happy with having more of these things together, but I think it would be a little more certainty. And I always worried about excessive powers of regulation. This is something that we, as the DA, are always concerned about, giving a lot of regulatory powers that bypass Parliament, bypass committees, when we sit with too much regulation. Although we said that it is there, what regulates it, but you actually subordinate regulation worries me that we pass the bill and then we get to Parliament and then it's out of our hands. I'm very unhappy about that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Slaveskagen. I can only say Ms. Lantan. Dr. Addis.
Thank you, Chairman. I had a discussion with one of my colleagues yesterday, and he mentioned that a number of countries have prohibited interactive gambling. I'd like to know if it's possible for the officials to furnish us with some countries which have prohibited the interactive gambling. And the second thing, Chairman, how are you going to control or treat addictive gamblers if they participate on interactive gambling? I'm very much a layman when it comes to this, but I'd like to have examples. If they can give us examples, how do you treat addictive gamblers if they participate in interactive gambling? Thank you very much, Jim.
Thank you very much, Dr. Abi. I'm sure from the comments and questions, it's very clear that this is quite passionate issues that people have old differing views on. I'll hold my remarks about dealing with the reality that we have perhaps so but late. But to end with your initial responses to the questions and comments.
Thank you, Shan. And I'll ask my colleague to come in and elaborate on some of the issues or to take
other questions the first question from Honorable Chirok. I think this is a challenging area, and quite frankly, the approach that we are taking is not one that seeks to encourage gambling. However, we want to regulate in the public interest. We do recognize the fact that there are people currently that are accessing internet gambling, and that it is incumbent upon government to regulate this kind of activity. We have a number of other sectors that we actually regulate in the public interest as well. And one typical example is the liquor industry. And we have legislation in place, we have regulations in place, but that regulatory framework is not intended to encourage liquor or drinking. It is intended to deal with the negative consequences of liquor. In the same fashion, the approach that we're taking with gambling is that of trying to deal with the negative consequences of gambling, taking into account that prohibiting this particular activity is actually going to be a costly activity. And this, I think, goes to the question that was posed by Honorable Lali around the high cost of prohibiting. What we are saying is that if you go the route of prohibiting, it will mean you will have to conduct dumb raids into people's homes to see who is actually participating in interactive gambling and who is not. And that is actually a very costly activity to undertake. Rather regulate it. Rather know who exactly is participating so that you are able to assist them in cases of addiction, in cases of overstimulation, and therefore you are doing that in the public interest. But certainly this is not intended to encourage gambling. And we make the point that there are actually very few people in this country that have access to internet. And therefore, a very small percentage of those people will access interactive gambling. So if you take the approach of regulating, you are in a position to know exactly who are those people that are accessing internet gambling sites. So I think this is the approach that we are proposing to the committee, and we certainly recognize the fact that it is a moral issue, and it's moral issues are very difficult to deal with and to regulate. But you cannot really stop people from gambling, in as much as we cannot stop people from drinking, in as much as we cannot stop people from smoking. But all you do is try to regulate in the public interest and to deal with certain negative consequences. The issue around trying to raise money out of these activities, it is not the intention, but as a byproduct, we do recognize that there will be service providers that will be engaging that will be providing interactive gambling services, and therefore in line with legislation which is currently in place, the National Gambling Act, we are saying that they should be treated the same as other providers that are actually provided for in the National Gambling Act. So in as much as they are providing a service, there should be taxation issues, and therefore we are saying that these people should not be treated any differently. And we're not imposing anything new in this regard. It's something that is already provided for in our National Gambling Act. And we simply taking a cue from that. And so is the issue around social commitment. We again are taking a hint from the current legislative framework. And in terms of licensing, it is the duty of the licensing authorities to make sure that licensees or service providers actually do commit to certain economic imperatives, such as black economic empowerment and social upliftment. The same as it's done in casinos, there's a lot of commitment that is undertaken by providers in that particular sector. So we are saying that in the same fashion, if there are to be service providers in this particular subsector of gambling, they too must commit to certain economic imperatives. And it's not something that we really are using to sort of get the buy-in of the committee, but it's something that we recognize that it is crucial that every service provider, every industry player should be committed to social upliftment. And again, it's not something new that we are proposing here. Professor Tulo raises the issue around treating gambling as an industry, and that it is really unfortunate. Again, this is something that was permitted by Parliament, that gambling should be recognized, there should be activities in that particular sector. And all that we are doing here is to try and regulate a part of it which is currently unregulated and where there are a lot of illegal operations ongoing. And therefore, we are saying rather regulate than prohibit altogether. And I think probably my colleagues will come in here around the same issue that was raised by Honorable Houseman around the fact that gambling is the moral fiber. Again, it's a moral issue. And how will commitment to upliftment be achieved? I'll probably ask my colleague from the NGB to actually respond to this particular issue, because it's a licensing issue, it's a condition of licensing that you require from service providers, that in allowing you to undertake this particular activity, these are the conditions that we actually expect you to abide by. But I'll ask my colleague to.
Thank you, Chair. I think one effort to clarify the licensing process as it will unfold within this industry. The board will obviously look into the code in terms of what is required in terms of broad-based economic empowerment. And from that, one is going to craft the request for application for these service providers, potential service providers, whereby the criteria will be listed in terms of what exactly do we want. Using obviously the parameters of the code, where one would, for argument's sake, from the management side, you want 30%, from the shareholding side, you want 50%, and so forth and so forth. From that, we are also going to add issues of social commitment by these operators, where we are not going to be prescriptive to say what should they actually do, but they will come up with proposals which will be against the benchmark that we propose, that they should be part of the social commitment in terms of their program. From there, each and everyone will go through the bid process and make those applications. And from those applications, remember the Act says, the proposed bill says, there will be a number of licenses that will be issued, which is a limited number. Let's say the number is determined by the minister to be 10. You sort of receive, let's say, 15 applications or so on. What you do, based on that criteria, you look for the best one within those parameters that you have created, which are lucrative and are most beneficial to the people in terms of what you have put on the table. From there, you select, you appoint them. But that is not the end of the story. After that, there will be a monitoring process whereby within the inspectorate, you monitor what they have said. If they haven't done what they have said, it becomes an issue where it's clearly articulated that there will be penalties or revocation of the license. So this will be the prerogative of the board to put the parameters and say, you act according to this rules of the game, and then they shall do that so that they get the licensing. So it is a controlled process where it goes step by step, and there are clear parameters in terms of what is wanted. As much as it has been done in the casino industries where the same process was followed. Coming to the authorized game, just to clarify, there was a question about authorized game. I think this should be read in perspective of that service providers that can come with a number of games, but each and every game has got to be authorized in each sense, in the sense that it has to meet a certain criteria, it has to meet a certain standard. They cannot have and how they like come with new games without us determining a standard or a criteria that the game should meet. One of the requirements is the thing which we call the return to player percentage. So I would say you might have a return to player percentage, let's say of 85%. If that game doesn't meet that requirement, it will not be an authorized game. Therefore, a service provider cannot give that game to the public to say it is a sort of a authorized game. So those are some kind of the intricacies that they are talking about in the video where they are saying it is an authorized game. So it's not that every game will be allowed, right? Coming to the issue of the obligation to report illegal and suspicious activities, this is not new, although it's being alluded to relatively here on the bill, but it is currently happening with your normal accountable institution, which in this case is the casino. The process goes together with the FIC Act, whereby they must produce rules which will ensure that they've got mechanisms to track down illegal activities and suspicious activities. What they do is they submit the rules to a supervisory body, the National Gambling Board, in conjunction with the FIC. Those rules are interrogated and tested and they are approved. And each and every quarter, the inspections which are being conducted over the accounting institution, which in this case is the service provider, which will say, these are the rules that you put that you say you're going to track illegal and suspicious transactions, and then monitoring of those rules will be done. And if there is any penalty, they will be fined in terms of the FIC Act. So there are control places in place. And one of the license conditions that will be put on them is you meet the requirements of the FIC Act. So if they don't meet those requirements in terms of rules that they expect and they breach it, it's a revocation of the license, a penalty or if it's a year, a revocation of the licenses. So those processes are there in place, applicable to casinos and other forms of gambling, even financial institutions as good as banks have got those processes in place, which the FIC in conjunction with the supervisory board is responsible for banks, which is the banking association, are monitoring them. So it's just a replicate of this process which is happening in banks. If it's efficiently happening in banks, I see no way how it is going to fail within the gambling industry. Right. Coming to the issue of providers not registered with the public. Again, the registration process here will be outlined and will be detailed in the internal control system or procedures being provided by the relevant service provider. What will happen here is, among one of the things, as was said in the broader outline, that FATF, countries that meet the FATF requirements and are a member of FATF will be allowed to participate in this. Those which have registered correctly, they will be put on the system to say if somebody accesses the system from this, dial-up network which refers to this country, you shall put controls in place to ensure that you prohibit them. Now, through the registration, what will happen is, amongst the requirements is the issue of an identity number or something similar, which is like a social security number or so, which links you to that country. So obviously, for you to register, is one of the mechanisms to ensure that you register people who are within the countries which have already been registered by FATF because they don't have anti-money laundering control measures. So the registration process also has been requested by one of Oliphant was that you do not make people together with your regular criminals. That is a control mechanism that you put in place to say, for me to interact with you, I should know you who you are, I should know where you come from, so that the respective measures which I want in place to protect or to ensure that people who do not come from jurisdictions which are recognized or interactive gambling do not participate into the activity. So that is not an issue of saying you want to have a domain of people that we call our permanent gamblers, but it's an issue of saying these are control mechanisms. Also, again, to ensure issues of age, as it has been talked about, and the issue of age boils down to the Vian Commission report, where that issue of the 18-year-old was recommended from the Vian Commission and transferred down to the first national legislation where it was said, and on the provincial legislation it was articulated that the formal age of gambling shall be the age of 18. Right, I'll hand over to Brian on some issues, and I might even come back on the other.
Thank you. on the issue of access to internet, the what the Honorable Refund referred to as in terms of his reading as you know, encouraging people to register to gambling. What in effect we're trying to do here is to ensure that the people that gamble are the people that are over the age that is required. We're saying that we don't want the site to be accessed by anyone other than people that have registered and that we have checked to see whether they comply with all the requirements. So if we don't have the system of registering, so it can be accessed by anyone, and then we can have a lot of our vulnerable people here accessing their own sites, children accessing their own sites. So it is intended to ensure that people that gamble are the ones that have passed all the verifications. And that's why we're saying before you access, you have to be registered. And then also the registration will go to all this to ensure that can access the site. On the issue of excessive powers of regulation, maybe let me touch on that. May I say that it is not uncommon for legislation like this, which seeks to regulate matters that are mostly or largely technical in nature, to have powers delegated lower down to the minister's level to deal with all changes in technology swiftly, other than having to go back to parliament all the time to deal with some few changes. But what we always ensure is that that power which we delegate to the minister to deal with those mainly technical and administrative matters, to ensure that they are able to react to changes, quickly. We ensure that they are guidelines or even he exercises those powers within defined parameters, and I think that we have tried in the legislation to say in the areas that we have provided for delegation, there is some guidelines to exercise the power so that he doesn't have unfettered power. So what I'm hearing is that it is not uncommon to have such powers, especially in this type of legislation. And we went about this legislation dealing with this by way of amendments, because we felt firstly that most of the general gambling issues that will apply also to interactive gambling are already addressed and are already addressed in the National Gambling Act. So it was a matter of if we do prepare a separate legislation, we will have had to do a lot of cross-referencing to what is already incorporated in the National Gambling Act, or to rewrite a lot of things, and that's something that in discussions with even the secular advisors, we felt it might be unnecessary, because some people would like to, when they deal with gambling issues, not to to go to just one piece of legislation, that they will be able to get everything pertaining to gambling, rather than go to one legislation if they're not sure, go to others, and especially if there's a lot of issues that are addressed already here that we don't have to repeat. Also, if I can also further elaborate on the issue of codes of prohibition here. What we're saying is that we'll rather have the resources of the state in terms of control and enforcement and policing to be diverted to areas that require a great need you know, all, you know, high funds and a lot of other areas and survivors would rather have the resources of the state be channeled to those than have them please now going to areas which can be dealt with easily by regulation other than, you know, your normal crimes where you want, you know, all the, you know, policing to take place there. So we're thinking that this matter is it can be dealt with the way that we have suggested here. In terms of the consultation, I think we'll have to acknowledge that perhaps it's never an easy thing to know when do you stop, when do you start, especially if you're going to go and target. Okay, let me put it like this way. The first stage normally is to just put your draft legislation out there for the general public in terms of publication, to say it is out there, go and let everyone, you know, who's interested, give us comments. But perhaps maybe something that we could have probably thought of identifying certain other stakeholders that might have not responded directly to the call for submissions and comments, to say, perhaps, you know, we want to hear from you. Maybe it's an area that we didn't really, you know, look into in terms of, you know, going there. But the danger there is you don't know where to stop, because you start with this organization, the organization, and then you can't really justify why the other one, why not this other one and that one. But I think it's something that we'll have to acknowledge, that maybe there are some limitations that we face on others in terms of, you know, organizations and people that may directly have an interest in this. And maybe we'll have to also seek the committee's guidance in terms of that.
If I may come in, I would like to emphasize that the approach that we took on this film generally was player protection. Because as much as we have a lot of people currently engaging in the system that is not accounted for, we needed to come up with something that would ensure that those who are actually involved, they are protected. Currently, we have people who are liaising in various countries, different websites, engaging in this activity that we are not really protecting or even knowing what they are doing. There are some risks involved that, because there are no controls, you end up even having minors involving in this unprotected activity. On the issue of advertising, the provisions that we have in the bill on advertising are very relevant, because currently, we do have advertisers who are advertising illegally on interactive gambling. So we felt that is one area that needed to be controlled. Yesterday, I looked at the magazine that is provided, I think it's a Warner. There was an advert from African Palace on interactive gambling, and that is not regulated, but it's there. So if we do provide provisions that look into this area and we do try to control what can be advertised, actually we are more responsible than just leaving it out for chance. For instance, our advertising can target protection of players by having notices that talk about problem gambling. We can use that as a channel to actually control the activity, or even informing people of the dangers of gambling. Coming to the issue of consultation, my colleague has already alluded to some areas around that. As a department, we did try our best to reach out to as many stakeholders as possible. There were stakeholders that we invited from civil society who could not be able to be part of the consultation process. But because this was something that was put out there for the public, we do acknowledge that maybe not all the stakeholders were here, as could have been the case. But there was a process that we followed to ensure that we consult as many people as possible. And also, we also have to be wary of opening it up too much, because we already had a deadline that we needed to adhere to regarding the religious bill. On the issue of age, of the 18 years old, I would think that we are in line in terms of coordination with other departments, because the current act, the Children's Act, does acknowledge that from now on, an 18-year-old is an adult, is a major. So it's safer to have this at 18, because now you limit access to the minors who are below that age range. So in terms of the coordination, in terms of the age alignment, I would say that we did try our best, adding to the fact that the WIRI court also recommended that age bracket. On the issue of the registration of players, registration is crucial, because then we can control and know who we are actually targeting or who we are dealing with in terms of this activity. If we don't allow for this, as Brian has already added, we are going to have a problem of not knowing how many minors are involved in this activity, how many young people are actually engaged. So the stricter the registration process, the better our team, or all the processes regarding this, this area. So I think from that angle, as much as it may be rigorous or it may be difficult for many people to actually register, then it would be a disabler. It would discourage people from actually coming into the fall and registering to be part of this process. On the issue of problem gambling, we do recognize that problem gambling is a very serious side effect to gambling. Hence, our bill has tried to address that in many ways. For instance, a player will be expected to set limits to the amount that he or she can be able to get involved with in terms of this activity. And you can actually self-diagnose yourself to see if you're a problem gambler. And also, there will be different messages through the website that tells you that be careful, you are going above board. Even the auditing by the provider can also assist to say to you as a player that you need to be careful. So I think there is room to improve on these areas, but I think we have tried through the bill to address some of these issues. On the issue of the number of countries that have prohibited this activity, as you've acknowledged, as well as it's got a borderless nature. So it's difficult to prohibit. It's safer to just control it, but not necessarily to encourage it. So there is an example of a country that tried to prohibit it, but now they are considering their move towards legislating it. That's the US. That's one example. Unfortunately, we won't be in a position to tell you about other countries that have prohibited or this activity. But you can appreciate the US as a very significant player in the global economy. If it's a difficult thing for them to prohibit this activity, how much more for countries like South Africa?
Thank you. Before I give you the opportunity for another round, honorable members, just to say that because of the nature of the amendments, it might be necessary, like we did the last time, to have one of our hearings as a public hearing, where we would invite a broader range of stakeholders, anybody who has an interest in this legislation, to come forward and give them the chance to articulate their views. And thereafter, have the department have rejoined, and then we decide on the way forward on the basis of all the evidence linked for us. So we look at the program and see what we can check in. Your hands for further comments and questions. Dr. Hasmini,
thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair. Chair, I would say that U.S. is the source of gambling. And we never gamble after gambling.
continent wide. You have brought about gambling in Africa. So I don't know what they were trying to do to prohibit, but we don't know. Maybe they'll send it back, you know, to their roots. Coming back to the roots, I don't know. Comrade Lani took us to the memorandum of the bill, and he highlighted 2.4. I would want to take the department to 1.2. This interactive gambling generally accepted to mean all forms of remote gambling taking place via the internet, etc. And it goes on to say the bill, however, excludes interactive gambling activities taking place between two or more persons that are facilitated by a third party. What would this be in actual? What is it that said to be this kind of activity taking place between two or more persons that are facilitated by a third party? What is that? And why are we excluding it? Can we explain as to why do you think to include this one? And this paragraph also continues and says, as the implication of this form of interactive gambling are currently being investigated. To me, what you are saying here, you are still under, you know, conducting some investigation. We are still conducting some investigation, but still you have seen it fit to bring the investigation before us, the bill. I understand that we have been investigating a number of activities, including this IT, interactive gambling, and therefore you come to us. I don't know whether you are in a rush for certain purposes. But still, there are other things that you are still investigating. And what are those things that you are investigating? And why should we not expect that in the near future, after we have passed this particular phase, you will be coming back, having concluded your investigation, and saying, we are bringing another phase to be amended. So could you explain yourself around those issues?
Thank you. I just want to re-emphasize, the emphasis there already. So we're not going to clap or change it. We're adding. But I just want to say that what's quite disturbing is that probably the term is not the word. And firstly, I just want to say we didn't laugh because we're concerned. It just sounds funny that you compare with America, at least for me. you say that your test has 350 million people access to the internet. But you say, in the same vein, only a small number of those people will have access to internet gambling. Now, I don't know. What does small mean? We need to tell our opponent, where do you get that figure of small to determine how much you're going to get? Because some people spoke about moral issues. I sat on a Friday, Saturday night, don't want to do anything else in my little room with my computer. I have access. And how do you, we've already said that it's going to be difficult to control those particular things. So I see to that. Now, also, I just want to ask you whether you're aware that there are people in this country currently that are, without the internet service, are participating in international gambling.
I know people that communicate regularly, the Australian and some North American casinos, so they get packs and packs of applications, phone sent to them on ongoing basis, and they participate without the computer or the internet for them. And I just want to know whether you're aware of it, and if you are aware, is there a mechanism, because not currently in the bill, if I read it correctly, that actually have a restraining kind of element on those particular things.
Thank you very much. That's it, Rock.
Thanks, Chair. I would support your proposal of public hearings, and I think we should invite religious organizations, trade unions, civil society organizations. And in response to our official there, even if you did attempt to contact those people, they're not listed in your memorandum. And all we can do is go by your memorandum, which doesn't indicate any attempt to consult with those bodies. So I suggest public hearings and we invite those people. I accept that prohibition may be costly and may be impossible. One accepts that. So we're not going for the maximum tax. But what is not clear is the overall intention of this bill. You know, normally a bill has in the short title the intention of the bill. This has no intention, and therefore, and even in the different nuances that you present, is it player protection? That's a very good motive. And if that's the intention, put it in the short title. The short title only lists activity, action. It doesn't indicate intention. You know, this committee was asked to approve the registration of Shabir. In my constituency, when this was announced, there was enormous uproar because registration is seen to be legitimation. And people came to me in my constituency and said, look, you're crazy. You're now legitimating something that is unfortunate. Now, so registration is seen as legitimation. Well, we must be very careful. Which brings me to the question of the precedent. Now, I can tell you this, and you may remember, this committee passed the Gambling Act with many reservations. There were many concerns of the kind that we've raised here today. Gambling. Is it a desirable activity? Should the state encourage? Should it be seen to be encouraged? And so when you want to extend the provisions of that bill, of that act, we are very cautious. You're extending something which we, in any case, have certain reservations about. So you can't just say we've done it before, therefore we're merely extending. Because tomorrow you will have to extend something else. You will say, oh, you fellows have agreed to A and B, now let's put in C. Where is this going to end? So please accept that our caution and our reservation cannot simply be overturned by the question of extension of something that exists. Because we're extending something which was unfortunate, maybe you're doubling the issue. So I would say the question of legitimation, in my mind, is a crucial one. We agree prohibition is probably not possible, so we're going to regulate. In what cause? And by regulating, are we giving recognition and legitimation? I think you haven't answered that one. So then, finally, Olaf deals with the consultation issue. And I would urge, and also the final point, is that in your memorandum, in the very first clause, you say it's resulted in a considerable loss of revenue. Again, you are legitimating the question of revenue or as a justification for this bill. And personally, I will vote against. I do not believe that our fiscus and our poor should benefit from taxes which we impose on activities which are undesirable. I think it's wrong. The principle is wrong. So I would urge that you remove that from there and that we should agree that what the intention of this bill is to curb a largely undesirable activity which exists, and we accept, we're not here moralizing, but which cannot be encouraged, and the state should not benefit from it. That's my view.
Well, thank you very much. Mr. Mike, I'm just checking. Did I see your head up or not?
Not yet.
Okay. The same question applies to Tate Chigala.
Thanks, Chair. Well, I was not referring the sentiment expressed by the police. Obvious that the committee has got very strong opinions around them on the overall. Suppose that some state chair who may have to even review the whole legislative framework. One is mindful of the fact that we're ending an amendment at the stage. First, let me just echo Professor of position around the issue of loss of revenue or gain of revenue on the national fiscal. Not only would one maintain that very unfortunate strong position, but also it would be interesting if, and helpful in fact, if the Department of Trade and Industry would provide evidence of that loss of revenue. It's rather fine-tuning that actually, amongst other things, is that sizable income from, you know, gambling. We really need to ensure that we get that information, and not only for the committee, but also for the parliament as a whole, not just the national assembly, but the parliament as a whole, to pronounce themselves if there is such a situation exists. Chair, understanding and supporting the fact that there will be public hearings and the like, obviously a lengthy process towards the conclusion of this amendment, one would humbly propose that the Department of Trade and Industry supply this Portfolio Committee for Trade and Industry with the well-documented information regarding one, socio-economic upliftment due to inductive gambling in other countries. In other words, evidence of socio-economic upliftment. The net gain, because it is a well-known fact that there has been well-documented research about the losses of individuals. Losses of individual income, which are part of the national income in any country. Now, please show us the net gains for socio-economic upliftment. Particularly in the South African context, it's about the disadvantaged, the poor, the wretched, the vulnerable and disadvantaged. The second area that would be helpful if the department can supply us is information around countries that have prohibited active gambling. Particular reference here is the reason thereof, as well as the current status or the status quo. Yes, one understands that the United States of America has already been referred to, but there are obviously other countries as well. I'm sure, Chair, as part of a regime of documents and information towards the public hearing, this kind of information would be very, very helpful, empowering for us to apply our mind. Just for the committee now in particular, Chair, a little bit outside, I'm calling our floor. I find it strange and very much disturbing that this amendment has actually been able to either jump the queue or seen as a small priority to other bills which the Department of Trade and Industry has been promising to present to us, which I feel are far more productive than this bill. Enterprise development, as an example, consumer protection, sugar, steel, and the rest. I know, Chair, it's a little bit outside, but I think it just triggered that thinking to me. That exactly Where are our priorities? Jabulela.
Great, thank you. Mr. Labaskati, sir.
Yes, thanks, Chair. I accept the thesis that it's too costly to prohibit, so we regulate. But we, by regulating, we're also prohibiting. And then we deal now, we say you can only interact with gambling with certain people. How does that prohibit, stop people who are doing this with countries overseas and so forth? I mean, so they're going to, I mean, at the moment people are indulging in this, we're going to take a small group and say, well, you can only gamble locally. But the other people who are doing it unlocally at the moment will continue to do so. How do we put those things together? Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Lavskati.
Yeah, thank you, President. Mine is just one issue in terms of foreign housing. In terms of the access internet, I want to link this with the age limit again. Maybe you bear with me my short sighted understanding of IT perhaps. But how could we make sure that, because I don't know whether we know how many kids that are accessible to internet. So how on earth then I then say that in terms of that age limit, then access to internet, and I want just link to that as well. So that understanding, of course, that you indicated that the question of prohibition is too high in terms of cost. The next issue is the question of consultation. Your response you are saying that you did not want to open wine because of your deadline. Just want to check whether are you out of your obligation in terms of the constitution, that in terms of consultation, you are obliged to consult whether it happens or not. How do you then, understanding of course that the committee has all agreed to have supported alternative capital back together. Because this issue of the consultation is an issue with the number of legislations, and it's getting problems. That sometimes if you are not broadly consulted in any legislation, that legislation may not apply. I don't understand in terms of the deadline, because if you are running for deadline, then they'll say, no, I'll charge 1, 2, 3 events because I'm running for deadline. Because you knew from the beginning that there is this amendment that's going to come up. Then therefore, in terms of your program, your time frame, you plan your time frame in such a way that you make a point that you contact properly. I want to get that really tell us in terms of the particular issue. I think in terms of the public hearing, as I said, that you also support one what happened here. As I thought I mentioned, one or two organizations, I think in terms of part of the society, they need part of that consultation process for public hearing.
Thank you very much. Could we have a rejoinder from the department? Today you are earning your living.
Thank you. Thanks, Chair. Probably start with the observation by Bernard Pichuro, and then I'll ask my colleague to give the other method. We welcome the proposal around public hearing. I think it's a something that we will gladly accept. And also because probably in our consultation we limited ourselves to people that responded to public comment call. But obviously there are people that did not respond to that call who may be interested, and probably because they may not have known about that public consultation process, and therefore could not, or rather would not pass the process. But we welcome the public hearing. We also take the point that probably in the short title of the bill, we just need to be explain to the coin and feedback as to what exactly the intention is to that pot. And then I didn't take that earlier. The intention is to, I keep on emphasizing, regulating in the public interest. And we have other areas that we deal with, which are precisely economic regulation. You know, and these are the kind of type of regulation that has been mentioned today. Why are we prioritizing this? I'm not sure, but you see, public interest regulation is as important as economic regulation because we want to take care of the negative consequences of gambling and to ensure that people are actually protected and that the activity occurs within control, control parameters. Yes, the issue around the fact that we extending on a regulatory framework which is already in place and where is this going to end? I must say that currently as a department, and I think this also goes to the question that was posed by Honorable Hasmin around are we going to come back to the committee with other proposal. Currently as a department, we are looking at gambling as a whole because we have recognized the fact that there are concerns around this particular activity. And because there are other forms of gambling that have actually surfaced that we're not, probably that Parliament was not aware of in 1996 or 2004, and therefore it is incumbent upon us as a department to actually take stock of that and then to say, are we going to extend this particular activity or are we going to stop, you know, with what we have currently? That's what we are currently engaging in. And which is why we are saying in the short time, or rather in part of the memorandum, that we are doing other investigations. Yes, we are, because gambling is very broad. It's got subsections and subsectors and programs. And therefore, we need to take a holistic view around that. And the policy that was taken previously in 2004 or 1996 was to say, let us regulate. But I think it's high time that we probably took stock of that policy decision to say, are we still going to extend different forms of gambling, or do we have enough gambling opportunities in this country, and have we approached an optimal level, and are we going to then stop? I think that's the kind of activity that we are undertaking currently as a department. So yes, I think we will probably deal with that issue and bring it to finality. The issue around registration and therefore in the same vein legitimizing this particular activity, I think it goes back to the approach. Why are you regulating this particular activity? And we are saying we want to regulate it so that we can keep increase, so that we protect players, so that we protect vulnerable people, minors, and so forth and so on, so that we know exactly who is providing this service to the population and to know who is participating in the activity. So registration is necessary in that industry, but it doesn't mean that we are encouraging, certainly not. And which is why we're saying through licensing, we'll be able to cap the extent to which the service will be provided. And also, by registering players, you also want to make sure that you limit it to a certain number. But I'll ask my colleagues to deal with the rest of the other questions.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Responding to the issue of note 1.4 the head, where it says the betting by two people over the internet using a third party, which is what is called person-to-person betting. I think the intention of the bill is just to exclude what is termed person-to-person betting. If I can just elaborate what it is, the person-to-person betting exchange, in short, is where two people bet on an activity, using a third party which is called a potential change in the form of a condition. For example, if it's a soccer man, there are two options to play a soccer man. I can bet against a bookmaker, which is a registered license, bookmaker, or I can use a third party which is an entity close my bet, if there's somebody who's going to mention that. That third party which is an entity mentions the two bets, and you find myself betting against an individual party which is a third party, whereby that third party gets my commission, but it's not paying the price because I'm betting against. So that is the distinction. Now, the issue of an investigation on this activity, yes, it is continuing. I don't have a doubt that somewhere it will come to a policy level where the decision is made whether it should be allowed or it's prohibited. Just at the moment, our head is silent, like, coming here today, this is what the government is doing. It's becoming a prohibitive sort of statement in terms of this thing. However, one cannot rule out the issue that when the Sierra Commission report was sent before Parliament, there were certain issues which were raised which are nowhere in this legislation. We cannot avoid them coming back in the form of an amendment. One good example, the issue of greyhound racing. The report says greyhound racing shall be banned, but further investigation needed to be done. That's what the report is saying. Now, calls are coming out where they are saying we want this form of racing. Definitely, wherever and however, what we do as the National Labour Party, constitute the team and say they can assess. Give it to the Policy Council or Department and make a determination to say, can we make a policy of ensuring that the legislated or the money taken from them? And again, as technology advances, forms of communication come in, you have to amend the legislation. So the issue of saying we have a cut and sew legislation and then leave it for the next 7, 8, 9, 10 years, I think we cannot avoid it, but we have due to a number of reasons that some of them apply. But coming to the issue of the small number in terms of participants of IT gambling, where they are saying now 3.5 million people have got access to the internet, which was taken somewhere from the CF which conducted the international gaming board. The reason why they say SAS becomes a small number is because.
Could you kindly excuse me? Honorable members, I think the laws of fair engagement, the demand of us, if we pose questions, we should also listen to the replies. So I don't mind you consulting on an issue now and then, but the content is unacceptable. Thank you.
Let me talk about the 2.5 million. The reason why you're saying it's small is from that 2.5, some of them are minor. From the age of 15, 40, they have got access to the internet, right? You cut them off, the number gets reduced. Right? For you to qualify to be registered as a player, one of the payment mechanisms is a credit card. Now, among the 3.5, there are others who don't have a credit card. You know, some of them might not even meet certain requirements in terms of saying they should have X, Y, and so. Drastically, as we put these measures, these are the people who are eligible, irrespective of the case of those who've got access to the internet to say, I make my right to choose not to participate. You see the number drastically coming down to a very lesser extent compared to the entire population. I think that is where we're coming from today. It is quite a smaller number because it's not like your classical brick-and-mortar casino where you just have to and you go in, you gamble, and then you go past. It takes a certain process. Second qualification criteria in terms of you being able to say you are now a person who can participate in that form of gambling. I think the issue of a lot of revenue needs to be clarified. There's a national gambling board which we actually interact with telephone calls, letters, faxes, and emails where people are complaining that they have participated in this so called illegal gambling activity. So illegal gambling provider, and they have. The provider does not play it according to the rules that they put on the table, and that they are putting the claim on us to say, can you help us as a regulator? Which obviously, they are not within jurisdictions that we regulate. Now, when one is used from there, it shows that there are South Africans who are participating in that game. Now, if those South Africans were participating in a regulated regime, firstly, that somebody would have been registered, it would have paid its dues in terms of consumption as a South African. Secondly, there are issues of taxes or levies within the gambling industry that is the same. Right. There are issues of intent to pay a percentage which we control, we should go back to terms of meaning. So that is where we come with the broader concept of saying, whether we like it or not, there is a lot of that loss of revenue. Whether it's small or big, but we lose that revenue because we only want to vet and a number of issues which come out from a company being registered as a service provider, paying the license fee, and paying the dues in terms of the levy that are due to it as an IT gambler operator to the regulated competition of gambling. But I think another issue that one needs to touch on is the how the minors are going to be protected. In IT gambling, for you to be able to access them, firstly you are given your own personal username, right? Which will be known by you. Now, if you are a minor, you have to acquire that username, acquire that password, and all said above that, you have to register. Even if that particular minor, which for the registration is issued also again with the PIN code, which was something like you have with your credit card. So it's an issue of saying, even if a minor has that access, the first thing that you must acquire is password, PIN code, and all those activities, which are results from registration. Those are the protective measures that will be used because he has to produce his ID number, which is linked to the system of the South African ID number, which has been linked to you, finding that you are below this age, so therefore you should not qualify. And he has to send certain documents and certain statements and so on, which will, according to our service, be in the hands of the person who is above 80, therefore, and other agents will not be able to access it. From that perspective of saying the requirement, surely preclude them because it's not even going to have a credit card so you can obtain a credit card to prevent it is under 18 and unemployment, all those kind of things. However, one cannot rule the realities of life that you will have an irresponsible adult who says, I want my kid probably to get on my behalf. That is his sole right, which is violating the principle of saying he should, as a parent or an adult, pretend that mind. You cannot overrule that as much as people can give you a PIN code. Go and get me my money from the bank. If your money is stolen, it's your own responsibility. I think those are the realities that we have. But we are putting measures to say this is the protection that will be there in terms of the system and the control measures that we approve as regulators to say, fine, you've been operational, health, and life. And then in terms of all those processes, I think it should.
Thank you very much.
Let's come in here on the issue of the provision that we place now on the citizens who have the gambling sites that are not registered in the country. I think the motivation here is more like twofold. One is in respect of protection, yeah, protection. And the other one is from a respect of fairness, gambling, of containing fairness, gambling. So probably you take the point, I think the initial thinking was the initial thinking was that people that we were providing a framework for people to gamble online in South Africa. And the thing was that kept those that do not want to gamble on sites that are registered, that will ensure that all the protections that are in place for them, they are on their own, and there's nothing can do, they cannot access the protections that are provided for in this act. That was the initial thinking. But I think it was also then, after a realization that, sometimes, you cannot say that you protect the people that are only prepared to subject themselves to the regulatory framework. Have those that might, for whatever reason, don't want to, somehow you can find a way of, if you're intending to protect them, to ensure that they are not taken for a ride, on the other side. Perhaps they would have had a prohibition to say you have provided here for you a legal way of dealing of doing and you have got that you have ensured that the people that operate are approved and if you have got any issues, you have got mechanisms to ensure that it gets addressed and help them, if you shouldn't then go and play outside. And also, you know, the sense was that even though, you know, because this type of gambling, you more like think that the people that will be able to access it are people of your, of a relatively, of a sophisticated nature, you know, having, you know, some sort of understanding of IT, you know, internet and all. But a realization is that there is a disease, it is a disease, it has been branded as a disease, and there might be people who might be doing it compulsively, and if you leave them out, then you not put your intention of protecting because you think that they can, you know, go and protect themselves, but they can't. So we introduced the prohibition. We accept that it is a provision and it needs some of enforcement. And somehow one would look at it as conflicting with the position that we had, that, you know, the cost it is high, but in terms of assessing ourselves, you know, from where we're sitting, the benefits and cost of doing it, we felt like that maybe the benefits are far more, you know, they outweigh, the cost of doing it. And then what you're looking at, health is a number which is smaller than currently, you know, we face with. In terms of the debt that we have here, but there is no way really of coming up with debt that can have, authority in terms of people that actually access lives, but the report that we got from the, one of the reports from the customers that you're looking at around about 230,000 people that, you know, access the general site, maybe the agencies or regularly, you know. But obviously, once you have the framework in place, then that number will drastically reduce, and people will be comfortable to say, "Well, that we actually, you know, in terms of other things, that the problematic people, you know, people there that we want to really, you know, expose themselves to life that they cannot really even enforce whatever, you know, right that they have, they might be low if you provide them something here that."
Thank you, sir. On the issue around the consultation of the husband wife or the client, we do have to mention the comments around the fact that we have strength and we take more of the situation. On the issue around the document that we can provide, I would like to also acknowledge the fact that
I just wanted to explain briefly around the consultation issue, and to say that as a department, we test consultation seriously, and that actually our consultation processes begin at the policy stage before the formal consultation process that we're talking about here. Before this bill actually was accepted by cabinet and then published for comment, we consulted previously on an informal basis with various stakeholders, and we drafted the bill, and after that we then approached cabinet, and there was also another public consultation process which is formal, and standard practice is you should provide for a minimum of 6 weeks, but as a department we actually go beyond that. We go beyond the call of duty in terms of consulting. And we actually open consultation for up to 8 weeks, if I'm not mistaken. But there are instances where we have consulted up to 6 months, you know, in certain instances. However, in this particular instance, we limited ourselves to those people that actually responded to the call for providing comments, and we had a meeting with them, just to clarify that we're not limited to the formal consultation process, but before that process, we do undertake, you know, consultation before we have a fully fledged being. Chair, I think the other questions have been answered, and I think we welcome the proposal around providing more information and data on countries that have communities and issues around social development and the like. I think we can provide the community with that kind of information, and I think it will happen during the public hearing process. I'm not saying there is any more issues.
Thank you, Chair. The bill of the question has been asked, that are we aware of people who are involved in international organizations but do not have internet? The parents are concerned from the security framework issue of arrangement, not aware. We are aware that they are not having, which are, you know, bogus, not having, which are going around the world, but from the side of our security situation, we are not aware. But we are people welcome this understanding. Feel that the change is going on, that it is brought to our attention, then we can attend to it in the right form.
Sorry, I don't think you've covered my question. I understand that there's a lot of illegal, prohibited, illegal, whatever, these unauthorized IG going on. And then we want to say we're going to legalize a few people. I mean, what's to stop the people who are already engaged in IG overseas and so stop them continuing that way? Are we just going to catch a few and say, well, I'm doing it locally? But the people who are doing it today, in any case, overseas or on the internet, are still going to carry on doing that. I mean, I'm just curious. So we're just catching a few, or where do they go? And also, in the documents you provide us, could you perhaps just give a schedule of the consultation dates that you had with the various people in this, you know, organization? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lamskirti.
Chair, I just wanted to be sure whether I got the answer straight, that the department has identified interactive gambling activities taking place between two or more, could be hundreds or so on. They've identified people within this process of bringing this bill before Parliament. And they say just because we're looking at the implications, why we'll come back to you later on if that's the case. But past this one, past this, that I've never heard of such a thing of government, you know, having actually undergone a particular research in order to actually amend the legislation, whereby one aspect of that research is not complete, they would rush with this one. Because I'm taking it very seriously, Chair, because it's costly for Parliament to pass legislation, and it's costly for the Department as well to work on a bill. Are you saying to us that having identified this one, we must go on, even though that you may come back with another one, which are still considering, or which you are still actually searching on? Is that what you are saying?
A short response to the two last questions, and then I'll check the way forward.
Okay, thank you, Chair. I think coming to the issue of how are we going to attract our children the people who don't gamble who are seeing from the South African gamble. I think it's a basic issue of firstly that there will be offered protection where they know where who the people they are with, they are with, and they are later, and there will be offered quantum protection in all forms that we have mentioned here. So it boils down to the issue that the risk is up to them to say, I gamble in a situation which is not I take that risk. Or I come home when I know it's regulated by A, B, Z, and these are the consequences of me gambling there without being here. I think it's a call of them making that. But again, within those which are regulated, even if it's not within the country, they choose to be. To conduct their activities and all that. It's an issue of basic competition. If South African interactive gambling industry offers a lucrative package to gamblers in the form of be it a low tax or higher return to player percentage, those are determinations that must be made by the partner. The partner will make that determination to say, this is my choice, this is where I want to go. As much as even if as we speak today, one has got different modes of saying, how do I choose within what is brought to me, available on the table, depends on what they are going to consider as vital to their choice as a first option of saying this is what makes the call of duty to me. And coming to the issue of the two forms of gambling which the honorable member has touched on, I think it's ideal that one explains that this is interactive gambling. And now the bill tries to clarify that this shall not include person-to-person betting. It will definitely come back, but I cannot preempt to say it will come back in a form of saying, yes, let's put another amendment in this, or yes, let us upload it in the manner that is upload here. But it's another form of gambling that we have. Within the broader spectrum of things, you have another one, as I've alluded, that for instance, issues of greyhound racing, it's another issue that you have to deal with at some point in time. Rightfully so, I think if one has to look at the whole spectrum issue of things is how the DM Commission came to the whole thing. It says right to the following thing, but the following needs to be investigated. And we're taking the cue from there and we're investigating each and every one of it as outlined there. Obviously, we cannot make them and say we make a complete investigation of all of the club on the issue. One has got to give the principles and informed decision and informed research based on threat to say we focus on this case in the account and then they make the necessary determination in terms of saying yes, we need to legislate or prohibit. I think to be very direct and open to the question of focus and direct answers to say yes, we might be coming back again to say P2P betting and can you please review put this amendment forward and say we need to regulate it. Because it wasn't considered as part of the investigation, it has just been considered. Thank you.
Thank you very much. It might not seem as if we have made progress this morning, but that would be a wrong impression. The common responsibility that we have is that members of parliament have got the duty and responsibility to ensure that the legislation that we craft and pass is the best possible under the prevalent objective conditions. And from the side of the department also has the equal responsibility to facilitate this process by also interacting with objective conditions. What is the reality within South Africa? What's happening? So, mutually, the responsibility that we have here is to critically, constructively debate and add issues. And at the end of the day, with the compact of civil society, all stakeholders to find the best way forward in the interest of South Africa. That's the common responsibility that we have. And as I said earlier, we look at our program and facilitate a meeting where we can reach out to stakeholders. those that we might have left out would be able to come forward to say, yeah, I'm the youth. And then we canvass the youth and in conjunction with the department, based on all the input that we received, seek to draft the best possible legislation. But legislation by its very nature cannot be cast in stone. It cannot foresee all eventualities into the future. This is why any piece of legislation, you have to review it after some time to see if there are any unintended consequences. If it has met or remedied the issue that it was crafted for in the first instance. So that in itself makes the process of drafting legislation a dynamic, organic process that continues. Not that once you have done so, that's the end of it. So based on the objective reality, what do we need in this country? What's in the best interest of the citizens of this country? That will determine which aspects are revisited and which aspects are elaborated on and further developed. So I'll say that what we are doing here, at times it might seem very sharp intervention, but the nature of the responsibilities that members of parliament have, and you as the department, six of us, to do exactly that in order to reach this refined process of drafting the best possible legislation. So when we've looked at the program, we'll obviously inform the department, and between now and the date for the public hearing, we'll obviously, through the offices of the department, the ministry, facilitate that members of parliament get the further information that's needed. I would like to thank you, people from the department, and also members. It seems there's lunch. Today is not a free lunch. Everyone has worked for the lunch. Thank you very much.
Chair, from our side, just to say thank you very much to the honorable members of the committee. I think it has been a real work exercise, and we do recognize the challenge of this subject, and it's something that really we cannot run away from. And as I speak right now, we actually are conducting awareness campaigns in the Northern Cape around alcohol abuse, because we recognize serious consequences there in terms of, you know, social use and all that. So I think it's something that we cannot run away from. We have to address, and we really appreciate the interventions and the guidance from the community. So we really appreciate that, and we want to pledge our commitment to this process. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Meeting is
Thank you. Thank you.